ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Talking Up a Storm, a Heroes Lounge podcast. The podcast about Heroes of the Storm and the eSport part of it that covers everything that you need to know and wish you knew every time all your cool friends talk about what's going on in the eSport scene. You don't have to watch any of the games. You can just listen to us and pretty much retell what we say, and you should be good. I am your friendly neighborhood Latino Narsha, as usual, behind the microphone. And today, I'm only joined by one additional guest, but he might not be very big, either in age or height, but he has a bunch of knowledge to share. Hida, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I'm pretty sure I'm taller than you, actually.
Yeah, but you don't look like it since you're 12 years old. Hida has been on the show before, obviously, so we're not going to introduce you too much. Hailing from the Netherlands and watches pretty much everything that has to do about Heroes of the Storm eSport, Master Level Player, and all that good stuff. But we are not here to talk about us, unfortunately. We're going to jump straight into the eSport that happened this week in Heroes of the Storm. And as usual, being from Europe, we're gonna look at the rounds that played out on the 31st of August, just this Friday. Starting out with Team Liquid going up against Roll20 Esports, and for those that paid attention last week, we kind of pretty much said that if any European team can take down Team Dignitas, it has to be Team Liquid. Liquid has been looking really good lately, while Roll20 Esports has been in a huge slump, being 8-0. Or 0-8 before this series. And the score, 3-0 to Liquid. How dominating was that, really?
I mean, it was basically just Liquid farming Robodoba, mostly. And then after Robodoba died, the rest of Roll20, there was really nothing that Roll20 had to put in. Like said, they had like no say in any of the games. It was super clean, super dominant. Nothing really to say about it.
Yeah, because we're that kind of show. The Roll20 problem has a name, and unfortunately, he's from Australia, and his name Robodoba. Tell me, what's exactly going wrong, except for him obviously not being a tank on that level that they need. After he came over to Europe, he's been in a couple of different roles, as I've seen, but this doesn't seem to be working out.
I mean, it's not just Robodoba, that's the issue for Roll20. Like, most of the players are, maybe with the exception of Shad, are underperforming on that roster right now. But the problem is just that Robodoba doesn't have the skill on tank for HCC Europe compared to all of the other tanks. He's the one that makes the most mistakes. He's the one that ends up feeding a lot of the time, which then snowballs for Roll20. Which is basically where the issues start, because if you don't have a good tank, it's very hard to have like a solid backline to do anything.
Yeah, and as we saw in this these three games too, he didn't get to pick his comfort, as we're going probably going to come back to later, playing Johanna Anubrak and then Diablo. I want to look really quick at the Infernal Shrines game though, the third game. Team Liquid pulling out. Is this solo lane ETC?
Yes, it was.
And Kael'thas being brought out by Roll20.
Yeah, Kael'thas can work really well on Infernal Shrines and a few other maps. Too, with Spider Queen is another map you can like pick Kael'thas on really comfortably. He brings really good wave clear. He has good stun follow up onto Diablo or onto like a Blaze E. Kael'thas just has a really... The issue with Kael'thas is just that he is a little bit vulnerable. He doesn't have the same amount of self-peel as someone like Jaina or Gul'dan does. He doesn't have that great, big, game-swinging, heroic ability that is like Ring of Frost or Horrify. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the issue. His wave clear is a little bit less strong than both Gul'dan and Jaina as well. So he's pickable, but he's more niche.
Yeah, of course, if at any place, I would also like him very much here on Infernal Shrine, see he can get some good value around the objective points, but let's not go too far into that. Team Liquid taking the series decently cleanly over Roll20 Esports, going on a 9-series loss streak, unfortunately. Then the second game of Friday was Team Dignitas going up against Granite Gaming and Team Dignitas, as we all know, are pretty much the best team in the West by far. Granite Gaming are slumping around in the lower half of the league, but 3-1 in favor of Dignitas, of course. But I'm a little bit upset to see the one map that Granite Gaming won was when Nasibo was picked by Dignitas.
I mean, it was Dignitas was dominating game one, dominating game two, then decided to go for a really wonky draft that got punished heavily by Granite Gaming. They played that map. I mean, honestly, all props to them. They played it perfectly. They took advantage of the fact that Nazebo's early game is a little bit weaker. They punished Dignitas. They invaded camps. They just basically did everything right to be able to win Towers of Doom and snowball that map.
Yeah, and while they have seen Nasibo rising in popularity earlier, as we have covered extensively here on the podcast, this time it was pulled out on Towers of Doom, a map where this to no means is as easy to double soak and get those stacks rolling easily.
I mean, I'm not quite sure why the Nasibo was picked to begin with. I think they really wanted to just try it out. The Nasibo is right now pretty much a hammer counter. Most of the time, that's why he is picked. He is picked to counter Sergeant Hammer to make sure that her life is horrible. And if you get to the late game, you basically one-shot her with a jar of spiders. There's no hammer on the side of Granite Gaming, so Nasibo, like just because of that, doesn't really have that. The niche that he is there for is not really fulfilled. And then if your game doesn't make it to 20, you're basically half a hero without Vile Infection.
There we go. There wasn't that much more really to say about the series. Of course, the Dignitas are taking home all the points, but Granite Gaming taking that one map off of Dignitas, how alive do they seem?
Granite Gaming is looking better every week. Honestly, as much as it was Dignitas kind of trolling that game with the Nasibo pick, it is still very impressive of Granite Gaming to be able to take such an advantage of that as they did and be able to like snowball it as much as they did. Because a lot of teams, and we'll come back to that later, show that they have massive amount of issues against Dignitas. Obviously, Granite Gaming themselves had so as well, but still being able to take that one map, still very impressive for a lower tier team.
Yeah, but a lot of people were guessing them to be in one of the crucible places before the season started, but has been looking good. Of course, also a couple of other teams have been looking not so fresh, but that is pretty much up to them. That was the European Games that was played out on Friday. Then we turn over to September, and on the 1st of September, we start out with Method going up against Monkey Menagerie, and we can say it again, Monkey Menagerie is pretty much the meme team in HCC Europe. They scrim minimal and pretty much doesn't put that much time into the game, but this was one heck of a series. I'm not pretty sure not everyone or very few expected this to go to game number 5, and even fewer expected that it was Monkey Menagerie that took home the two first maps.
Yeah, that series was honestly just really weird because Method was looking really bad in those first two games. Monkey Menagerie was not playing very the most clean. They were playing better than they were before. That has to be given to them. They were not playing as bad as they were in earlier series, but still, Method's play, especially Curson and ADRD, in my opinion, have to be pointed out here because Curson was pretty much feeding on cooldown. Like if you were playing Hero League and you had that, he had Curson on your team, you would be reporting him for intentionally dying. It was pretty much that bad.
He had a rough series on Saturday for sure. Did not look very fresh. I also see the solo tank or like the main tank ETC being brought out on Cursed Hollow. Also an animal we haven't seen around the farm in a while.
Yeah, it's funny. Like ETC was picked a few times. I think his win rate is really low as well. I think out of the four games, I think he won only one, which was in this series. Which was honestly a draft that Method had no business winning. But most of the time when people picked ETC, like after the series, they were kind of like, yeah, that was kind of a mistake. Maybe we should not have picked ETC. He just has issues compared to the other tanks. His survivability is a little bit lower because he has lower health pool. And he basically relies on being able to use his abilities to get the armor, which gives him some extra self-sustain, obviously. But if you are stun-locked, it's kind of hard to press buttons.
Yeah, indeed. We also saw him being utilized as a solo laner and such, all in all, not very high in, or at least very far from his usual position as pretty high and the top of the tank tier rating. Apart from that, of course, Method, let's call it impressive, as they came back and took the reverse sweep, winning the last three maps and taking home the series 3-2, but I'm pretty sure they were sitting with a pretty foul taste in their mouth after losing out those two first maps.
Yeah, most definitely. It was mentioned as well in their interview post-game that they were happy that they won. They were not happy with how they performed. I can agree with that. Their performance was subpar across the series. It's just the fact that Monkey Menagerie is not a very good team as well. So it was basically the first two games were really bad, and then after that they stepped it up a bit, and Monkey Menagerie was not in in a position anymore to basically punish Method as much, which is basically why Method still won the series in the end. But that is like this Method this weekend was we'll come back to Method later on, but
yeah,
this series alone was not a good sign for Method.
Yeah, it almost felt like some warning lamps were going off there. Yes, I saw some tweets later, and the players was like, "Okay, we know we messed up, but we got there. Calm down, it's gonna be fine." And then, it wasn't necessarily as we're moving on. The second game on Saturday in Europe was Fnatic going up against Leftover, and this is pretty interesting. We see Fnatic, of course, not making it to the last LAN, the last tournament, which is very unusual for them, but have been looking much better so far in this split over the last couple of weeks. Then they have Leftovers that surprised everyone and got to the final, led by Mopsio, all that good stuff. But have been struggling a bit more since they came home and had to kind of adjust to the offline environment. But still, we went to map 5 air.
It was a really good series. Honestly, it had everything that you want from like a high level esports game. Especially for like one in the middle of the season that is not Dignitas versus Genji, which is obviously what every series will be, but obviously that can't happen. We had really interesting things come out. We had Anna played twice by Fnatic with Li Ming, so they were kind of going for like blow ups with nano boosted Li Ming. They had like in game one, they had Murden Stormbolt into nano boost Ming combo and a BFG, which deleted pretty much anyone on the side of Leftovers, which was really fun to watch. Anna's creeping into the meta a little bit. We'll see a little bit more of her later. And NA, I believe she was picked a few times as well. But yeah, it's cool to see Anna picked up a few times. It's not a hero that we see a lot of.
Yeah, definitely one of those heroes that since release haven't put her stamp on the esports scene at all. Tracer being picked by Leftovers in game 2, I see, with only one support.
Yeah.
Or Yrel.
Yrel doesn't really go. It's pretty impressive. That game was a massive stomp.
Mm-hmm.
Leftovers controlled the game really well, and that's actually pretty impressive because there's a lot of things on the side of Fnatic that draft that if Tracer steps out one time and makes a mistake, she is dead because Deckard cannot follow up on her with heals very easily. So DAB, props to him, played really well that series, game 2.
Yeah, that was the Tracer play in that second game of Towers of Doom was just really good. And especially when you look at the drafts like Fnatic, they had the global, they had Hanzo with the Claire on the camps, and like there is ways to play this map out to like to get the advantage and being able to hold it. But yeah, Leftovers, that's some pretty impressive play. That, as you mentioned, it was a stomp, and you wouldn't guess that looking at the game on paper. So yeah, very impressive from Leftovers, especially in that game.
It's also something that will come back a few more times, and it's basically the holy trinity of heroes that you can have currently. And it's Diablo, Deckard, Yarel. Is currently probably right now the strongest first three picks you can get, together with a few other picks. Obviously, Genji being there, but Genji being banned pretty much every game. Murden a little bit, and there's a little few others that kind of come close to being on that same tier. But if you can get your draft opened up with a combination of Diablo, Yarel, and Deckard, preferably all three, of course, you are in prime position to win that game.
Diablo on the current patch in Europe, his 100% popularity, 57 out of 57 matches, 69% win rate.
Yeah, Diablo is doing really well right now. He has so much, like, it's really good. The good thing about Diablo right now is that obviously he's a really tanky tank. And since the changes, he also has a lot of self-sustain. So when he goes in, he actually can keep himself alive a lot better. And he actually has build diversity as well, which is really good. So you can draft him for multiple things, which makes it, you can kind of draft him with like the old school one-shot build where you just go APOC and try to blow someone up, or combo it off with like Leyline or AFVP or whatever. Or you go for the W build with Lightning Breath and you just basically roast everything inside down to a crisp. Diablo is really versatile, really good right now.
Yeah, it's cool to see him getting his place in the meta. I was a little bit worried after the rework, but it definitely turned out well for Diablo. It was represented in every game in the Fnatic Leftover series that ended 3-2-2 in favor of Fnatic over Leftovers. The teams winning each a map every second time, making it especially interesting for the viewers. A great game to watch again too, if you would like. But so are the games that happened on Sunday, especially the second one. But starting off with Team Liquid taking on Team Dignitas. We mentioned it before. If any team is to take down Team Dignitas, it probably have to be Team Liquid, and that was not to be, at least not yet.
Honestly, Liquid was a massive disappointment Sunday, compared to what I expected of them. Dignitas kind of rolled over them. Game one, Liquid was basically rotating late, like always behind Dignitas, always running after them, always just too late, and like a talent down. And Dignitas was taking full advantage of everything. Game 2 was kind of the same. Liquid was basically not by power to do anything about Dignitas, and the same story unfolded in Game 3. It was a good series to see Dignitas play, because obviously Team Liquid is the second seed in Europe right now, and seeing them do this well bodes really well for their chances at BlizzCon. But it was kind of disappointing to see the second seed of Europe being taken down this easily is pretty much how you can say it.
Yeah, at least on paper, the 3-0 is pretty convincing. And I think I saw, was it Calder or something, that tweeted, just give us Genji versus Dignitas. Just you can play like BlizzCon and it's fine, and like you can like have a winner and everything, and then Genji and Dignitas can play to like decide who's the real winner. Because like at the moment, it doesn't seem like anyone in the Western scene can touch Dignitas, and it pretty much looked the same over in Korea. So we're gonna head over to Korea very soon. But yeah, Team Liquid not getting a single map of this series against Team Dignitas. Team Dignitas qualifying for BlizzCon are, of course, to no one's surprise. But now it's not technically possible that they can't make it. Then the final game on Sunday was a really interesting series. A pretty good series. Roll20 Esports having lost 9 series in a row this season. Then we have Method on the other side being led by the Mad Scientist ADRD, and they have been going to LANs. They have been looking pretty solid, a great group of players and all that stuff. Kind of clowned against Monkey Menagerie early in the weekend, like we talked about, but took home the victory. But here, this series was a different tale.
Yeah, this series was basically the same kind of issue as it was versus the Monkeys. Method was underperforming a lot. And it was basically the same issue. Gerson was feeding really hard, mostly. And there was a few other players that were like underperforming. Obviously, they were all playing less, like not as good as they would usually. But it kind of goes to show that Roll20, which is a team that honestly, like as you said before, up until now has not won a single series yet in Phase 2. And Method is the third seed of Europe right now. And then in one weekend, they have to play the 7th and the 8th seed. And they have this much trouble. I mean, after after the series of Monkey Menagerie, you can kind of go, okay, that was probably a fluke. Well, next time they play versus Roll20, it'll be an easy 3-0 and we'll go on until next week. But the opposite was true. The same issues as versus the Monkeys resurfaced again versus Roll20. And Roll20 actually punished them a lot better than the Monkeys did. They actually took... the second game was a little bit snowball-y to the Snowball Queen. We all know how that map works out. If you get that first turn in, if you get a few picks, you can kind of win that map from just Snowball alone. But the other three maps were convincing for Roll20, which is not something that we've seen the split so far.
Yeah, that's also something. But we saw a tweet, a semi-salty tweet. Do you remember from who about the double ban system being the MVP in that series?
I believe it was Benny. Not entirely sure.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. That is for those not in the know, directly against ADRD and the ban strategy that Roll20 Esports pulled out, which pretty much was Abathur,
and Medivh. Yeah.
Every map except for one, I think.
A Tomb of the Spider Queen, it wasn't an Abathur ban. But,
yeah.
I mean, Abathur on Tomb is not really a very strong pick, generally. But yeah, it kind of is that. That's kind of the issue with for ADRD. Abathur is a really strong hero, always has been, pretty much. And Medivh is a very strong hero right now as well. Medivh is, as little as he's played, he is kind of pretty strong meta right now, because Dink does playing him a bit. And I'm actually kind of surprised that teams are ignoring him as much as they are. But Method, Abathur, and Medivh are their bread and butter. Those are their picks. Those are the two heroes for ADRD that he get. Like, if you give him those, you can basically kiss that game goodbye. Because ADRD is insane on those heroes.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily a very mechanical skilled players on a lot of other heroes. But shouldn't there be like some warnings signals going off at over at Team Method now? Like Roll20 Esports, as we mentioned, are now 1-9 after taking down Method. And is it that easy to beat them? You just ban out ADRD heroes?
I mean, to a certain extent, yes. If you're gonna target ban anyone on that team, you should probably be doing it to ADRD, because of his hero pool, he plays a bunch of heroes. It's not like he has a small hero pool. It's definitely not a big hero pool, but the heroes that he is very good and very comfortable on, those are not a lot of heroes. Those are basically the Abathur and the Medivh. There's a few other picks, but those are not as meta right now. And if you take those away, you can basically go, okay, that's one player basically neutralized, or to a certain extent at least weakened in what he can play. That makes it a little bit easier for you in the draft. And this has been kind of a problem ever since the double ban was implemented. Only up until now, Method has not really seen any problems from it. Or not as much as they were before, at least.
They are still in the running to go to BlizzCon, of course. Looking at the standings after this weekend of play, as mentioned, Team Ninjatas with a 10-0 win loss ratio, winning 30 maps, only losing out 4, are well on their way to BlizzCon. After them is still Team Liquid and then Method on third place. Fnatic is back on to the fourth spot. Well, Leftover is down to 5th, then Granite Gaming on 6th, Monkey Menagerie on 7th, and despite the win this weekend, Roll20 Esports is still at 8th, in the 8th spot, and are looking ready for Crucible. Can technically anyone else than Monkeys and Roll20 go to Crucible? I don't think so.
Granite can still make it to Crucible if Roll20 wins. It beats both Monkeys and Granite. They still have to play both, if I believe, if I'm correct. So Roll20 actually has a decent chance at actually still making it out of the Crucible. Though their map score is not amazing, so they would have to beat one of the other opponents that they still have to play, which is, I believe, Dignitas and Fnatic. No, not Fnatic. Dignitas and someone else. I can't remember off the top of my head that who they still have to play, but
it's a theoretical possibility.
Yeah, there is still a possibility. It's a very slim chance, but I mean, if they show some good games, who knows?
Who knows? Talking about good games, North America also played a round of HEC this weekend, starting off on Friday 2. First of all, out the gates is Tempestorm taking on Team Freedom. Tempestorm, the semi-super team until they lost some, had a replacement with Jin, did not look very good at the Clash, but have been looking a bit more back to form online, but didn't go so well against Team Freedom.
Yeah, it was actually kind of surprising how poorly this game went for Tempestorm. Their drafting seemed off a little bit, in my opinion. Team Freedom played really well, like all props to them for winning this game, but there were some really questionable drafting decisions made by Tempestorm. Especially the Chromie in Game 3 I found highly questionable. I don't really see any reason to draft Chromie right now. I think Chromie is actually one of the worst heroes in the game at this point, after her changes. But yeah, it was just really weird. Obviously the ban on Li Ming, which is like the other hero that you would get as a mage, into a hammer, was really well done from Team Freedom. But still, there were other options that were far better than Chromie in that game.
Yeah, Chromie, especially after seeing these changes, haven't been very popular. So yeah, not at all working out for Tempestorm, unfortunately. Of course, Team Freedom isn't a bad team. Isn't a bad team at all, but a little bit of wonky both drafting and play from Tempestorm, and losing out that series 1-2-3. Then the second game of the round on Friday. So Simplicity going up against Team Octalysis. 3-0 to Octalysis. I'm not sure if it's the result in itself isn't super interesting, but we did see Valera in game 2.
Yeah, Octalysis has been drafting some very fun things. They had a main tank D.Va in game 1, which is obviously really fun to watch. The Valera game 2 was also pretty... It was interesting. I'm not sure if I agree with that being a Valera and a Leoric pick, but still, the Valera worked out for them. It was actually pretty well played. And then game 3, they went with solo frontline Johanna, which was also pretty interesting to have their offlaner be the Abattoir, quote-unquote. Octalus is looking really strong right now and definitely in the running still for BlizzCon.
Yeah, what about Simplicity, though? Like, Simplicity is like... I don't want to say they're the Monkey Menagerie of NA, but like...
Yeah, they're not really.
Yeah, they're not really. It's more like this a bunch of old names, people that has been around forever, pretty much, and it's kind of hit or miss.
Yeah, it's... I mean, to be honest, like most of these players, King Caffeine, Akaface, they're pretty much past their prime at this point. Obviously, they're still better than most of the Open Division talent that NA has, which is saying a lot about the Open Division talent in NA, in my opinion. I don't think NA Open Division is particularly strong, but it's not like Simplicity is a horrible team. They're not by any means the worst team in NA. Mm-hmm. That will still go to no tomorrow, but it's just they're not they can't cut it with the top four. And NA, there's a really clear divide between the top four and the bottom four. You have Tempo Storm, HHE, Freedom, and Octalysis, which are very clearly the four stronger teams in NA, and then you have the four others. Endemic, Simplicity, LFM, and No Tomorrow, which are duking it out to not go to the Crucible.
But of course, as we all know, in North America, anything can happen. Team Freedom, as mentioned here by Hide, is one of the stronger teams in North America, while Endemic, poor them, are not. But then they went up against each other in the first series on Saturday. Endemic Esports taking home the series with a clean 3-0 victory.
I have to say I missed the games on Saturday, so I haven't watched these, but I am very surprised by this result. I can't say that I would have expected this. And if Endemic would have won, I would have expected it to be in a 3-2 and not in a 3-0. Looking at drafts, really solid drafts from Endemic. Not necessarily wonky drafts from Freedom, but Anubarak into Hammer is a little bit iffy because Anubarak doesn't really do well into heavy auto attackers. I don't quite like the Tomb of the Spider Queen draft either. It's very low on wave clear into a team that has a lot of wave clear. And then game three is basically a little bit of a weird Tyrael, in my opinion. I don't quite see why there would be a Tyrael there. Let me take a look at the bans real fast. No, there was a lot more open than Tyrael, so I do not see a reason to draft Tyrael here.
Yeah. Very high Graham in priority too, which is...
Yeah, I don't like that.
But, yeah. It's not like Graven has always been I'm a ranged flex player. I've played a lot of Graven over the past couple of seasons, but I don't know. He just, after the changes, there's so many heroes that does semi kind of the same, just better. But then we're back to a more balanced power level with Tempo Storm taking on LFM Esports. LFM Esports second to last on the rankings, while Tempo Storm are looking to get back into their winning ways and doing it this series at least with a 3-0 victory. Not much to say, not many interesting heroes picked or very surprising results.
Not really. LFM was, I did not watch this series, I missed these. Looking at Rats, LFM probably just wasn't at a place to be able to contest Tempo Storm. As much as they didn't have a great series on Friday, they seem to have gotten their strength back in time and show that they're still a strong contender in NA.
I was watching this on Saturday, but game three in the second game is a bit too late for me. I see Vikings being pulled out on Volskaya Foundry.
Sorry, what?
Isn't that Vikings by Tempo Storm?
Oh yeah, no, that is a Vikings. Yes, I completely missed that. No, that's
something.
It's kind of like a page from the book of Dignitas that ran this. It's pretty interesting. I guess it worked out really well for them. I think I will actually go back and watch that game.
Yeah.
Vikings. But yeah, no, that just looks like a draft that will be like, it's basically really hard for LFM to get onto the point into Johanna Hammer. The Genji can basically farm the backline really easily. Vikings will be able to get enough split pressure that it's like, oh no, we have to win these protectors. And even if you do, you have to get max XP. Outside of it, you need to get as much soak as possible, and it can be really hard to do.
So at least it very, very much worked out for them in this series for Tempo Storm, leaving us with only two more series in North America for this round. First note, tomorrow took on Heroes Heart Esports. Heroes Heart Esports winning the series to no one's surprise, though. No tomorrow, they did take a map on Dragon Shire, but Valera Abathur, Heroes Heart, that's pretty disgusting.
Yeah, I love Flare Abathur. Well, I love playing it. I hate playing against it. It's fucking
of course.
It's basically you get silenced and you're like, ah, okay, I can press my... Oh, no, wait, never. I still cannot press my buttons and then you're dead. It's really obnoxious to play into, and on a map like Battlefield, where you kind of have to go to a certain place to fight, Valera can take advantage of that really easily. Although, by any means, that game was not that clean from Heroes Hearth. The No Tomorrow was playing really well. They were getting picks, they were getting fights, because obviously the Abattoir solo support doesn't have the best sustain. So if you can get a few picks, then with a comp like what they had, which has a good amount of blow up, you can actually kind of deal with that reasonably. But Heroes Hearth winning in the end. Game 2 was pretty standard. No ranged DPS from No Tomorrow, which is kind of weird for a Towers of Doom, so you have no poke, so you cannot interrupt anything. Then game 3 was honestly just a really, really wonky draft from Heroes Hearth, in my opinion. I don't really think, like, I mean, the game was pretty close if I remember, but I don't know, if I look at this draft, it doesn't scream to me like that there has to be an Ana here, or that it's like, or that there should be a Kel'Thas there even. Like, Kel'Thas on Dragonshire is, in my opinion, not a very good pick. He doesn't really bring too much to that map that, like, basically makes it so you can pick him.
Yeah, and again, especially compared to the other mages, both Jaina and Gul'dan, that does much of the same job, only better and safer. Kel'Thas being picked 4 times in North America, Korea, and Europe, have lost every single game for Guy. But as most of us know, he will be back again. Then, lastly, rounding it out, Team Octalysis taking on Endemic Esports. Endemic Esports coming off a height after beating Team Freedom 3-0, but it didn't quite reach up in this game against Team Octalysis, as they lost 3-1.
Started off pretty strong. I only watched the first 2 games of the series and then fell asleep, I think. Game 1 was really strong, really solid from Endemic, if I remember correctly. And game 2 was basically the complete opposite. So I'm just going to assume that was basically how the rest of the series went as well. Kind of funny to see Uther there twice. Uther Genji being picked. I don't disagree with the Uther picks. They're not horrible. It's kind of interesting to see it into Li Ming, though. But besides that, I mean, Uther has really solid burst protection. Pretty decent into Phoenix.
Yeah, some Uther also coming out there. Apart from that, pretty high Phoenix prioritization by Endemic, even though they did lose 3 games in a row with him. But yeah, decently standard drafting. Just really quick, how do you see like the current meta, just super quick, in North America versus Europe? It's a lot of the same heroes these days, isn't it?
I feel like NA is like a little bit more focused on the triple melee setup, in like many different forms. A lot of Zeratul, a lot of Thrall actually.
Thrall, yeah, has
a very high participation rate. Malthiel's popping up a lot again as well in North America, which is kind of surprising to me because I don't really think Malthiel's particularly strong right now. He has his place, but I think he's being picked a little bit too often. But besides that, I mean, Europe is drafting a little bit more standard and a little bit more towards the Korean meta as well, whereas America is basically going, well, we have 2 melees. Do we want another melee? Why not? And, I mean, to be honest, triple melee is not horrible right now, but I'd like to see a little bit more variation, because triple melee, to a certain extent, is very counterable.
14 games of Thrall so far in North America on this current patch. One half of them, so not too bad for the old War Chief. That is going to give us Heroes Hearth on the top of the North American standings, followed by Tempo Storm, then Team Freedom, and then Team Octalysis North America, only having 2 spots for BlizzCon, so it will likely be a tough fight over the last spot, as Heroes Hearth does seem solid enough to be able to go, like, pretty surely. Of course, Tempo Storm, Team Freedom, and Team Octalysis on their best days will have to battle it out for number 2. If you had to guess right now, which one of them will take it?
I think Freedom.
Oh, yeah.
I think right now Freedom is more solid overall, if they're not clowning like they did versus Endemic, which I can assume is what happened. Besides that series, I mean, it's kind of the same what happened to Tempo Storm in that series between them and Freedom. It's like they kind of clowned. Either team on the strong day can take the series between the two of them, but I think on most of those days Freedom will beat Tempo Storm.
That is North America. We are quickly going to cover a few things from Korea before we round it out here. Last week we complained that Korea is super boring because every series is 3-0 and every series win in favor of the favorite. This week, exactly the same,
except for one game.
Almost on the last day of the round, in the last game of the last day, we see Ballistics going up against Miracle here. Ballistics being the huge favorite, and not only did Miracle win, but they won 3-1 instead of the classical 3-0.
Yeah, Korea right now is basically just Gen.G top dog. Nobody can touch them. Tempest second fiddle to Gen.G. Then Ballistics and Blossom, and then the other four teams are basically just kind of in some hierarchy. I can't quite remember. It's probably like, but that doesn't matter. It's basically, there's no surprises in Korea right now. There's nothing special happening. If there's any drafting weird things, it's from worse teams against better teams, and it doesn't do anything, so it's not really worth talking about.
Yeah, like, of course, we can, like, there's still very high priority on Sonya and the random Kel'Thuzad coming out here and there. But, yeah, as you mentioned, it's a lot of the time worse teams picking it against the better teams.
Yeah, but then you have Miracle and Ballistics, which was honestly, after the weekend, because there was five games, all 3-0, kind of what you would expect was another 3-0. But Miracle actually stepping it up after beating Gen.G so far, the only team to have beaten Gen.G in phase two of AGC. Actually, the only team to have beaten them since, I believe it was Ballistics at the Western Clash, or the Eastern, sorry, not the Western, the first Eastern Clash.
Yeah, in spring.
Yeah, so that's honestly pretty impressive. And now they do it again against another top team in Korea. Miracle, they look pretty convincing against Ballistics, which was the weird thing.
Yeah, and we also see them now. They have climbed past Team Blossom up to that fourth spot on the standings. Of course, behind Gen.G, which is on top, followed by Tempest and Ballistics. And Korea does have three spots for BlizzCon. And Miracle, like, do you think they can push out Ballistics here or Tempest?
I don't think they'll be able to make it in top three.
Does sound like a bit too tall of an order, even though they have been looking solid.
The thing is they, if they don't make it to top two, they have to play playoffs anyway, so it will only be for better playoff spots for them. I mean, to be honest, if they can beat Ballistics, if they can beat Gen.G on a good day, honestly, that just means that the other, like the number 3, 4, 5 of Korea, which will probably be Ballistics and Blossom, they have to make sure that Miracle is not on a good day when the playoffs happen, because that will mean that there's issues for them, because that means that they can potentially not even make it to BlizzCon, which would honestly, for Ballistics especially, be a heavy upset if they don't go to BlizzCon.
Yeah, pretty much Gen.G, Tempest, and Ballistics need to go to BlizzCon. So, but it's really interesting with a team that can pull out an upset and bring something special to the table at least once in a while. That would be Team Miracle. That was pretty much what we cared to talk about from Korea. Here is what we're going to talk about from China. Okay, this week, as this is Heroes Lounge podcast, we always tend to mention what's going on with the Educational Lounge. The Educational Lounge is Heroes Lounge's own educational series, where our one of our staff members and managers, Heartless, sit down together with Cavalier Guest. Cavalier Guest, for those not in the know, is a North American Heroes of the Storm, let's call him personality. He has been a coach for HGC teams, other teams, and is pretty much well renowned for knowing a lot, if not everything, about the game. Honorary EU member, and this last week they did something special, as they have different subjects each week. And last week it was shot calling, all about the shot calling, and bringing out the special guest Michael Udall, that is shot calling for Endemic. So if you guys out there want to learn how Udall shot called Endemic to that 3-0 victory in the weekend. In the weekend over Team Freedom, then that is definitely something to check out. It's on our YouTube and stuff like that. And of course, every Thursday is a new round of Educational Lounge, where Heartless and Cavalier Guest talk about some new subjects. So feel free to drop by the Twitch the Heroes Lounge Twitch channel to be sure to catch that. Apart from that, that was pretty much all we had for this weekend. Hopefully next week we can get an additional crew member in here, so it's not only our two boring voices for these 45 minutes. Thanks a lot once again for coming on the show, Hide.
No problem,
always a huge pleasure. That was all we had for now. We're gonna be back next week, of course, covering the next round of the HGC. So if you want to make sure that you know everything that you should know to be cool at the parties and impress the girls, then keep listening to the show. I'm your friend and neighbor, Latino Narsha. We are out for now. Until next time, everyone, good luck and have feats.